He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and traffic avoider.
That is true. And I'm trying to reclaim some of those minutes of my day. And he is Aubrey Goodman, restful services, and really, when it comes down to it, all things code and architecture, everything. And conquistador of code. And this is a little thing we like to call distilled. Welcome in here. If you want to connect with either of us on Twitter, you can do so. I'm at JWD2A. Apologies for the worst Twitter handle in the world. And you can grab Aubrey at Aubrey Goodman. Substantially more simple. You probably found this podcast, but if you somehow stumbled upon it in a garbage bin somewhere in the middle of downtown Tampa, you can find more of these wonderful artifacts there on Podomatic or on iTunes. Just search for Distilled. And lastly, if you want to hear us talk about anything specific on the show, you can do that. Just tweet and give it a hashtag hashtag Distilled Topics. There you go. There's the all the housekeeping out of the way there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a sequel episode. This is what's funny about this sequel is it's actually, if you think of sequels, usually you have movie one, movie two. This is actually sequel one. We had episode zero, and this is episode one. So it's a sequel to the zeroth episode.
Wherein, ironically, we talk about the exact same shit we talked about in the first one.
Yeah, exactly. But
did you hear me pause there for just a second? I was like, I want to see how long we can go before anybody curses, and this time we didn't even get two minutes in, it seemed like, and there we go.
Yeah.
Mark the time, folks.
So that's the deal there. We had some extenuating circumstances.
Lack of button pressing, apparently.
That's kind of part of it. Did not bring the prior episode to you that we recorded, and so we actually don't get credit for it under our contract. And so we have to record it all again, or else the label does not let us fulfill our contractual obligations of 700 episodes in the space of 2 years.
True.
So, by the way, all of what I just said is bunk, except for the part about having to record this again. So what we talked about last time, and what we'll talk about this time, is the difference between a product and a business. This is something that that's come up a little bit here and there. I've seen investors talk about it. I've seen other people talk about it. And it's easy for those of us who are building products often to sort of lure ourselves into thinking that what we're building is a business, when in fact we're not. We're building a product, or at worst, a feature, and we're calling it a business, right? And it's an interesting dilemma because it's very transparent, I think, to investors if you're trying to raise money. And it's transparent to the public, frankly, that when you don't really have a business, you actually just have a product or a feature, as it were. Now, there are always notable exceptions to this. Instagram, you might say, is not Instagram. Well, Instagram, too.
Instagram's a perfect example of a feature.
A perfect example of a feature that somehow became, and it may not even still be a business.
It was
it's still just a product that made a lot of money. Right. And so it's not to say that you can't just say, I'm just building a product, I'm not building a business, and that's okay. It's just that you have to understand what you're actually making, because it changes how you communicate to others about it, I think.
I agree.
And I think the difference of how you communicate there, this was the thing that I loved that I said on the last
Ghost episode,
was, and it's not like a zero-based array where zero actually means something. Right. It's like a one-based array.
Zero means... Well,
yeah, exactly. It's the difference between my product does this and I'm in the business of doing this. And that's a subtle phraseology difference, but saying my product takes fancy pictures versus I'm in the business of helping people breathe new life into photography are two very different things.
Very.
And so anyway, That's that.
Yeah. In our Ghost episode, we talked about how the App Store concept has changed how we look at what that is, how you define whether you're building a product or a business.
Right.
And it does that because it changes the conversation between the consumer and the producer.
Yeah.
Because there's a sort of a third party in the App Store example. Apple is acting as the business and makes it easy for you, the developer, to publish a product. And the business is sort of shared by you and Apple. But I think one of the most compelling things about the App Store is how easy it is to sell something. Now, I don't mean how easy it is to make money.
Right.
That's not what I mean.
No, but
how
it's easy to sell.
To sell. Because if you think about it, when you are the distributor, you are a business. You take the time to think about all the supply chain. You have developers. If you're building a digital product, you have developers who are building a product. They're building features. They're building a product. You are selling that to somebody.
Yeah.
But your developers also have to build all the infrastructure in your system. And I think the focus on infrastructure, when you have to build the infrastructure, you focus so much more on the business because it's a higher stakes game at that point. You have to spend all this time and energy building the infrastructure. Then you have to spend the energy promoting the thing you built.
Right.
And all that, no one's going to do that until they've proven to themselves or an investor that there's a good reason for doing all of that investment and all of that work, because they're building a business. They're not building a product.
Part of it, and I don't know if this is even a legitimate comparison, but I'm going to attempt it, is that when you're building something like the App Store, you're building a system that is designed to produce a set of results. I'm trying to say that that's not the same as building a product, which, yes, I granted you could say it's a system that gets certain results. But the fact is you're building the App Store is in the platform business, right? Platforms are a little of a different thing. I mean, they're a business, no doubt about it.
It's a partner.
Right. So I don't actually know what the hell I'm saying, really. But yes, the fact of the matter is when you're working on the business, the difference is this. Apple has the App Store, which is one aspect of their business, right? And if you even look at their business as just like sort of the iPhone world, the mobile device world, the business includes lots of disparate products. It includes the phone and all the accessories. It includes the iTunes. It includes the App Store. Includes the physical locations you go into to get service on that phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a bigger business that you're partaking in. And what it's brilliant, because what they've said is, we're not going to make all the products. We're just going to create a distribution channel, and our business is being a distributor, and a platform. And we're going to let you all you peons out there, you create the products for us, and then we'll just take all your money.
like a recording label.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's actually exactly the same model as a label, right? It's in fact, there is almost zero difference. Which actually does make me wonder why there haven't yet been app labels. Why are there not even companies that say, okay, I'm gonna provide resources for you to create this, and I'm gonna help promote the app for you. You're the talent, you create it and do all the development of this thing, and we'll manage all the other part that labels do for artists. And we have access to the distribution channels, and we have that you otherwise don't really have access to, like we do. Because we have the power to get this in front of more people.
But isn't that what Apple's doing?
Kind of. Only reason they're not doing it is that there's no one that competes with them.
But you're talking about providing services to the developers.
Right.
who build the apps right. on the App Store.
Like almost like an agent. But I mean, it's that's what a label
agency,
is.
Yeah. Right. Label and agency, they're yeah. all sort of the same.
Which is a really fascinating thought because there's lots of developers out there who are really talented, but they might not, I mean, they don't know how to market their products. They don't know how to all this kind of thing. If you put somebody in the position of going, okay, you're just going to be the talent. You're going to build it. You're going to run it. You're going to make a lot of money off the royalties that this thing makes. And we're going to send you out to do signings. And we're going to send you out to do conferences. And we're going to send you out to do this, mm-hmm. But you're our bitch. And you're going to sign a 5-year contract. And in that 5 years, you have to deliver 7 apps. And boom. And we're going to pay you an advance on each one, and then we're going to recoup those royalties and all this kind of thing. Actually,
sounds like a business that we tried to float earlier this year.
Yeah.
Get any investment. Because you need, we were going for $5 million to get enough seed capital to do that internally. I like the agency model personally. I think there's some things about it that suck horribly. But that's why you just hire someone to deal with those things.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is like a, it's really odd. It's a different type of agency than sort of what we think of usually in the web world, like web agencies, web dev agencies. It's not that type of agency. It's it's a talent agency model to product development, which I think is really cool.
Isn't that what Zynga does, though? I mean, to some extent.
The problem is that they produce all the stuff in-house.
Yeah, so they're not...
The key is that your talent isn't in-house. The key is all you are access to distribution channels and provider of resources for a cut of all the profits. So you're the one... you're more or less an investor... Because all a label is an investor,
right,
but they're an investor that has also they pick up the responsibility for the marketing and distribution.
Right.
That's really
interesting. I've not thought about this because that's the other half of this business that App Store provides. You know, Apple provides with the App Store a natural distribution channel.
Right.
But they don't market anything.
Right.
Well, except for unless you get like. Top 100 or featured app or what have you, which is very infrequent and unlikely, and I think highly quality driven, or at least money that Apple thinks they're going to make when they put that app on the featured list. The onus is on the developer to market their product.
Yep.
They give you the distribution platform, the ability to make money with it. But like I said before, the ability to make money and success at making money are not the same thing. Ability is the infrastructure. You can take payments.
Right.
And
I mean, to draw the analogy even further in the music world, all they are is a record store. That's all they are.
Yeah.
It's just a record store that can hold as many records as you want in the world. And when you pick a record up, there's always another one there. Like, it doesn't run out. There's no inventory, right? I mean...
Right.
And so the difference is the label's able to say, hey, record store, so we're going to put this in the featured rack up by the front door, aren't we? Aren't we? You remember that lunch that we went to last week, right? And that nice cruise that you and your wife went out to? So we're going to do this featured rack thing, aren't we? Yes, we are, sir. Right. We call this payola. Well, that's actually not technically. I don't actually know. But either way, the other difference there is in the music world, you have access to a massive resource that apps don't have. And this is interesting. You want to talk about a weird product interaction analogy and comparison here. Because the only difference really between these two things is labels have access to the bigger distribution channel, which is radio. Which, if you think about it, and you keep the analogy going, radio is a way for consumers to try out your product passively without having to really opt into it, which is bizarre, and it's probably not something you could actually ever do with a real product, like an app, because you kind of had to interact with it. Music you don't have to interact with. It plays, and you go, okay, I hear you, and I like you, and I want more of you, right? But an app, you can't, you're not like, oh, I see you, and I like you, and I want more of you, unless it's a pornography app, in which case this could work. Or just like an orgy sounds app, just a radio station of just orgy sounds. That could be pretty cool.
Sounds like Lords of Acid.
So I don't know. That's where the analogy breaks down, I suppose. And really, radio is responsible for driving CD sales and product sales more than almost anything, mm-hmm. even today, I imagine. I mean, it has been historically. Is it still? Yes. I would imagine it is. And by radio, I also mean any kind of streaming random choice service. So Pandora counts as radio.
Right.
Spotify radio counts as radio.
Right. So I think there isn't an equivalent for apps.
No.
In terms of marketing platforms and infrastructure. Apple will maybe feature your app if they like you, if they really, really think they're going to make money, if they like your app a lot. But that isn't even really going to be that much
right.
extra traffic. You have to drive the traffic yourself.
Yeah.
Or have a partner who's going to do that for you. Wow.
Yeah.
So we've expanded on business in a way we did not do in the Ghost
exactly.
episode.
Exactly. This is actually better than the Ghost episode.
I'm saying. See? Sometimes you just have to will it to happen.
All right. So a new thing that we're going to be doing is record every episode twice, and we're going to throw out the first one. Those will be in the garbage bins downtown.
You know, we should just record those as like geocaches and just put a little zip drive and just hide it like under a rock.
Oh man, geocache podcast, geopodcast, geocache cast, cached,
cached,
no. CACHT, cached, which would be like you hunt for podcasts in physical locations so you can listen. Oh. This is even better. Holy shit. You can actually build an actual app off of this. You do.
Wait, are we talking about product, feature, or business?
Fuck. Product. No, business. Make an app a business where an author, nonfiction or fiction authors, record an audio recording of a story and separate into chapters, and participants have to go geocaching to find the next chapter of the book.
I like it.
And the chapters, the location that those caches are hidden at, have something to do with the chapter. So if like this chapter is about like murder, maybe you find the geocaching
context.
Graveyard uh-huh. or right? So it's like this.
I like it.
That would actually be really cool if there are enough like amateur audiobook recorders recording their own
front-loading ghost town problem again.
Yeah,
but cool.
It is cool.
How do you do that? Like, do you actually just like store it on a USB stick?
I guess so.
And like, how do you like? Geocache involves finding something. What do they don't keep it?
No, you would have to be able to plug it into a device. So if it were,
You could geocache a QR code that they scan to download the content.
There we go. That's it. That's what you would do. Yes. Or you could geofence it.
Just geo. Oh, this will work. You could just put QR codes.
Yeah.
Just sticker.
To record.
Like a little icon somewhere.
Right. Collect the whole set of digital content, but with geocaching. That's actually an awesome idea.
Sounds curiously like a product we've been discussing earlier in the week.
That's true. I know. I'm into this whole collecting thing now. I think we should collect everything.
Gotta catch them all. And that trademark infringement brought to you by
somebody.
I don't even want to now further infringe by saying anything about sponsors who aren't sponsoring.
Yeah.
Again, Knob Creek. Here's an opportunity. And again, an opportunity for us to be drinking when we're not.
Yeah. It's been actually a legendarily long time since we've had a drink on this podcast.
I know. It's I don't understand us at all.
Somehow I got in my head I should be working. It's terrible.
It's
a terrible idea.
So I want to talk about the other spectrum. We talked about business. Let's talk about feature.
Okay, feature.
When you are building a feature and you don't know that it's a feature, you think it's a product. Or worse, you think it's a business.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you know that it's a feature? Do you try and like build a something around it? Do you like acknowledge, okay, this is actually a feature? We don't really have a product that it sits in. It sort of lives on its own in its isolated deal. How are we going to encapsulate that, and how are we further than going to sell it?
My answer to that is, I think it's not really an answer. It's a pontification. Mm.
It's my favorite kind of answer.
Right. Because it's a non-answer. It's like an answer you put out in the world, and you're like, do enough people agree that I can call this an answer, or I'll just call it a pontification, in which there it doesn't matter. I think that the first thing is, it's sort of like being a drunk. You kind of have to have the self-awareness to realize you have a problem, mm. right? And you have to realize you're just building a feature. Mm-hmm. How you come about that realization, I don't actually know. Mm-hmm. I think for most people it happens that the thing never works.
Accidental?
They're accidentally...
They failed through to the point of discovering that they actually built a product, a feature.
Right.
They thought it was a business.
Yeah, or somebody just flat out tells them, who is smarter than them, this is not a business. This isn't even a product. This is a feature. It's
a feature of
and that it's
product.
A cool feature, and it's a great thing, but it's no more than a feature. So you've got to find a way to make this bigger. And I think
there's the opportunity that you might sell it to somebody. So instead of a business,
possible.
You sell a feature to another company
possible.
To integrate into their existing
yeah.
product.
I think the only way you do that, though, is if you have IP that is protectable and really complex.
Yeah, complexity, I think, is the most
right.
important thing.
Probably.
The
but they
IP
can't rip
is important.
Off.
That's good.
Those features are easy right. to build. I mean, it's like...
Yeah.
A very few things that big enough companies who would want to buy this wouldn't just go... Oh, cool feature. So we'll build that next week,
right.
you know?
The Instagram thing. The only thing Instagram has that can't be easily replicated is the filters.
And audience.
Well, audience
I mean,
is...
that's
yeah,
really...
That's also just part of the intellectual property that
right.
falls under the value umbrella of the trademark.
Right.
Meaning that the trademark is useless without the audience, and the audience is useless without the trademark.
Yeah.
In a way.
All of you are useless if we didn't exist. I sort of like that. I don't know. I don't know how you... The question is, once you realize that, what do you do? Mm-hmm. I think the question is, you have to ask, what problem are you solving? And you have to back it up to a bigger and bigger problem. Mm. And so it's like, okay, if you are... Let's say you have a feature in an app. Okay, let's use our little geocache novel example, for mm-hmm. example. Right? We create a thing that allows you to scan a QR code that you find in a geocache and download a piece of continuous audio from it, from that QR code, right? Mm-hmm. It's actually a little bit bigger than a feature. It's kind of a product, but let's just say, I guess the question you would ask, you say, what are we really doing? Like we're making a really interesting game for readers so that readers have a new way to, but why are we making readers do this? Well, okay. It's a cool way to get out and explore a city. Okay. So we're helping readers, learn history, or we're helping them get out and do this while we also help authors to, expose their works in a more interesting and social way, or I don't know, something like that, right? And you back it up and be like, okay, if that's all we do, then I don't know. I mean, I don't actually know how you do it because it's so case dependent.
Well, it's the choose your own adventure kind of genre in a way, where at the end of the chapter that you're listening to, there's a clue that will tell you where to go and find the
right.
geocache to the next chapter.
Right.
So I think, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's very much a new way of writing books. Because
right.
you're trying to engage, you know, you want to, the reason that people were walking around is not just because they want the next chapter, but because, I mean, that's mostly it. But the goal is to integrate the fun of the story into the geocaching experience.
Right. Right.
So.
Right.
That, I feel like, yeah, we're talking about a product at that point.
Yeah, it is. How do you back that up to a business?
Mm.
Well... The easiest way is to say, what are the economics involved?
I think you would sell to the authors or the publishers to say, if you use our system, then you will you know, have this unique book that no one else is doing this. I mean, somebody might be doing it. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, you'd add some value to add experience into the total sum of, you know, reading the book. You know, maybe you get to sit outside of some cafe, and that was, you know, some important scene in the book happens at that cafe. And so the geocache is like under the whatever table. That would actually be a really hard geocache, but
yeah. Huh.
Things that move make for lousy geocaches.
That is true. That's true. No, but I think part of the question is, like, when you have a product, how do you get a product to a business, is apply economics and be like, okay, well, who do we charge? How do we make the money? Blah, blah, blah. And so it's like, okay, well, if you took this example, you said, okay, well, we're going to charge authors. Now what it is it's a service to take an author's book that either they've recorded or we record for them in audio, right? So now you're starting to build other components onto it. You're saying, okay, so we're going to charge you $10 a book to chop it up, create all the QR codes, and then we'll let you do this, or you can pay some of our people to go out and hide the geocaches for you, blah, 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 right? So now you're backing it up by applying economics and saying, where does the revenue come from? What's the cost structure look like? Da, 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 da. And now it's starting to feel more like it's a business. A little bit. I think.
As we wrap up this half hour, I want to talk about a personal experience with this and the evolution from my perspective of something that I built. That when I originally started building it, I thought it was just a feature, and then I realized, oh, it could be a business, but it actually wasn't a business, and I never sold a single solitary dollar worth of service on it ever.
Yep.
And that is a tool that I built for something that I need, you know, just tracking URL availability. And at the time that I built it, it was not something that there was any other services really doing it. There's some monitoring services, you know, but the things that were out there were very feature limited. The features that I wanted to offer were slightly more advanced than anything anyone was offering. And I thought, you know, there was a pretty good slam dunk. I have this problem, so other people must have it. And I know other people do have it. It's mostly that I didn't go far enough. I spent all the time focusing on the feature side of things and developing what needed to be built to solve the problem that was present in my daily life as a developer. And like spend all that time on that, but never spend any time thinking about how I might monetize it or anything like that. And as a result, naturally, you know, the engineer's bane, or, you know, the engineer as sales rep strategy is bottom up pricing. Well, it costs us $80 to do that, so we should just mark up $10 and charge you $90.
Right.
Like, well, okay, but what if they were willing to pay like $150?
Yeah, exactly.
Or like $1,000.
Exactly.
You got to start with the value you're delivering,
or more important, the value the market will bear.
Right.
Right.
Not a cost-based strategy, but a
market-based.
A demand or whatever. Yeah, market.
Yeah.
Demand-based, I suppose. Yeah. So I spent an awful lot of time, not really that long, really, but quite a lot of time developing features for an app that I wanted to sell, and I thought, it's going to sell.
Yeah.
I'd convinced myself that it would sell because I knew I needed it.
Yep.
And in the end, what I got for my time and my money was an infrastructure that I use for dealing with my problem, and it does solve my problem. But realistically, it was something that never was a business because it was features of someone else's product they hadn't built yet.
Right.
And then I built it. And instead of finding those other people who hadn't built it yet and wanted to add it to their product offering in their roadmap, I instead simply tried very, 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 very poorly through, for example, $1 a day AdWords to find a market and reach that market. And it just didn't work.
Yeah. 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 So that's to some extent, that's the peril in creating anything, right? Business or product or feature.
Yeah.
Is that you could create an entire business and you open your door and nobody shows up.
Yep.
Yeah.
So and that's the ghost town.
Yeah.
For our ghost episode.
That's it. That's it. Absolutely.
Sequel.
This one is actually, I think, more interesting. The little diversion there in the middle, I think,
yeah,
was interesting.
That's good.
I'm going to start the first ever app label.
Yeah.
That's my goal. Yeah.
But every time I've tried to get you to make an agency, you always say no.
Well,
but now we talk about a label, and it's inspiring your musician side.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
It's all semantics.
Well, folks, that'll do it for us.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening.